Okay, so David Hawkins of Congressional Quarterly in the old days, former senior editor, Roll Call, and who's been covering Congress for a long, long time. So let's start out with the firing of Jeff Sessions. What can you tell us about the insider poop on all of this?
You know, I think the insider poop is that everybody expected this was going to happen right after the election. I don't think we expected it was going to happen the next day after the election, but I think the handwriting was on the wall that that Trump needed to keep Sessions in place through the election to try and, you know, not foment some talk of a constitutional crisis before the election. But as soon as the election was over, he felt liberated to take Sessions' forced resignation. I noted with interest that the resignation letter itself didn't have a date on it, so I'm still haven't figured been able to do any reporting as to whether Trump actually had that in his desk drawer on election day or not. You know, I think the choice of Whitaker was also seemingly done by the president himself without too much consultation with others, and that the notion that the president says, "I don't know Whitaker," is just sort of silly on its face. Whitaker, of course, was going to have some potential legal challenges as to whether he can exercise all the duties and powers of the attorney general without being confirmed. But I think, as you and I are talking now, that it looks like Whitaker will only be the acting attorney general until early January, and then Donald Trump will make a nomination of somebody who he thinks can be confirmed. Now, last time we talked, we talked about Mitt Romney, and here's where Mitt Romney might make his first headline in the new year. Is Mitt Romney is one of several Republican senators, including sort of the usual incumbent suspects like Murkowski of Alaska, Collins of Maine, who have said there should be no confirmation of any attorney general who does not pledge explicitly to leave the Mueller investigation alone. So we will see if that that campaign rhetoric lasts into the new year and whether a crucial block of Republicans withholds their vote for any AG nominee until such a pledge is made.
So let's go to the Mueller investigation. That's a great door you've just opened. We hear, it might not be true, that he is writing their report right now, that it's going to come out. And we know that Whitaker may just put it in the drawer and say, nobody's going to see this. Is that possible?
It is possible, and I think I'm glad you asked that, because some of my some people, my friends and so forth, who seem very plugged into this, don't quite understand that Mueller's does not have the power to stand up at a microphone and go to the Xerox machine and announce his findings himself. The rules are that he gives his findings to his boss, who at the moment is Whitaker. Up until 2 weeks ago, it was Rosenstein, and it's up to his boss, the attorney general, or the person acting as the attorney, you know, acting in his stead, it's up to that person to decide what to do with the report. There is no guarantee that whatever Mueller reveals will be made public. Now, I will say, you know, I don't have any independent reporting on whether Mueller's writing his report, but from everything I know about Mr. Mueller, you know, he does not operate in some sort of political vacuum. He knew the election was coming. He probably heard the same discussion that we did about, you know, or Sessions. Had the same expectations that Sessions would leave after the election. Oh. I am guessing that Mr. Mueller and his team are smart enough that they got all their ducks in a row before the election. You know, lots of files on zip drives, lots of redundant copies on servers in places. And some people are feeling like, you know, all of Mueller's work will be destroyed or something. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think that there is a chance I think there's a chance that Mueller won't put his report out while Mr. Whitaker is the acting attorney general. He will wait to see what the new nominee says.
Let's change course here. 2020 is coming up. Obviously, the
just around the corner.
Just around the corner. I'm going to name a name, and you take no more than a half a minute on each of them. Okay. Michelle Obama.
Zero chance. I mean, the book makes clear she doesn't like politics. She's not running.
And we disagree on that. I think she's a responsible person who will say, if this is what it's going to take to save the Republic, I have to do it. That's okay. Where we disagree. Okay, let's talk about Hillary Clinton.
Gosh, I sure hope zero. I mean, I was stunned when she sort of didn't close the door the other day. I think that I guess I'll go out on a limb here and say I think it suggests a remarkable lack of self-awareness that she would even open the door. That the party is done with her. They are furious with her. It was a marriage. It was a sort of a marriage of convenience to begin with, and she has no hope of restarting her political career.
Deval Patrick.
A fascinating guy. I think a compelling, certainly a compelling persona, compelling spokesman for the party. I think he would be in the top tier.
Me too. I think he's terrific. Do you think identity politics means anything? I want to ask you that. I mean, Obama got a lot of African-American votes. People
right.
turned out in a way they did before. Wouldn't Deval do the same?
He would, I mean, so this is the fundamental question that the Democratic Party is facing for 2020, is which route do they want to go? Do they want to go these sort of identity politics, really energize and excite the liberal base and the African-American community and the Latino community and sort of go try and find, a national version of Beto O'Rourke that they hope can get a couple of more points than Beto O'Rourke got? Or, do they want to go the sort of the Kristen Sinema route, the somewhat surprise winner in Arizona Senate seat, and go for somebody who can bring over blue-collar, white working-class men and women with a sort of centrist message. I mean, it's, that's the oversimplified, slightly oversimplified, but also pretty basic decision that the Democratic voters are going to have to make.
I taught the legislative process for years. I want to ask you a question. It now appears that the Republicans licking their wounds are coming up with a plan so that members of committees, not the three big ones at the top, could elect their own chair as opposed to having somebody committee or an individual name them. What do you think?
My guess, I haven't read that story. My guess is that is an effort being put forth by sort of the Freedom Caucus conservatives, who think that they would have enough clout on a few committees to get their guys at the top, and they are all guys. I'm not sure that the way it works now, of course, is that there's sort of what it's glibly called the Committee on Committees, where different constituencies within the Republican Party get to assign somebody to a committee, which makes the committee assignment. The leadership has a lot of seats on this, but then so does the Texas delegation has a member, the California delegation has a member, all the southern states have a member, and then they nominate the top people. I tend to think that that's going to prevail. I think devolving that much power to the people on the individual committees would be not something that the rank and file would want to do.
I could talk to David Hawkins for the next year. David Hawkins is the former senior editor of Congressional Quarterly Roll Call. He covered Congress for CQ from 1995 through 2018. Thank you, my dear friend. And when you come up to the Northeast, you always have a place here. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Alan.